San Luis, how are you? Soy Gabriela Ramirez Arellano.
And I am Alejandro Santiago. Hola a todos.
We are the product and reflection of the places and people we surround ourselves with.
The environments in which we live inform our decisions as well as our options and opportunities.
And so when the world as we know it is reflective of only one or only a very few perspectives, we can become the product of silos.
And silos are structures that separate us from understanding and connecting with one another.
For Emilia Serrano, uprooting from Union City, California to Troy, Missouri as a teenager became one traumatic transition after another as she found herself siloed in a new community.
The small Midwestern town was as unfamiliar to her as she was to it.
Her time in America's heartland shaped her so profoundly that her experiences became the inspiration for America's big screen.
All right, quiet on the set.
And she's winning. She's taking her stories all the way to Hollywood.
Emilia Serrano is co-executive producer of major network television shows like Promised Land, Mixed Dish, and High School Musical, The Series, just to name a few. In fact, Emilia's creativity and skills have attracted the attention of major production houses. She recently sold exclusive content to Columbia Pictures, Sony Pictures Worldwide Acquisitions, and for America Ferrera.
Emilia was raised by her parents in a Spanish-speaking community that nurtured creativity and determination among Emilia and her two sisters.
Her dad, a mechanic, and her mom, a mariachi singer, guided her to fight tough battles and to find her voice. She is proud of her Mexican-American culture, and her authentic stories reflect her passion to see more inclusive on-screen characters who reflect the real people in her life and culture.
You know, I always say that growing up in kind of uncomfortable scenarios, like, you know, being fish out of water, we're basically transplanted from California to the Midwest. It felt like it was such a struggle and oftentimes culturally challenging, but then that's exactly what helps me write stories now. So a lot of times I say, oh, sometimes all the crappy things and all your trauma can actually make you money if you put it down on paper.
Emilia and my family moved to Troy, Missouri around the same time, and it was a culture shock for both of us. Because in California, we were constantly surrounded only by Latinos in our family. So we weren't diverse either. We ventured to the Midwest, where the cost of living was so much more affordable than the high cost of residing in California, but it came with several compromises, socially as well as culturally. For many of us who moved to the region at that time, that was the beginning of our code switching.
Wait. What do you mean code switching?
Well, code switching is when we act or behave differently in the words we use, the way we dress, and sometimes even how we express ourselves just to fit in. At work, with certain friends or groups, and not necessarily the way we would be authentically at home. You probably don't even know you're doing it already, Alejandro.
Like, I'm a pro at it. You know, if anything can is putting yourself into a situation that you don't have a choice to be in, and then kind of navigating and figuring out, you know, how to be and how to exist.
One of Emilia's middle school teachers was the first to introduce her to the fact that her own voice could exist, that she could be and do great things utilizing her authentic voice without needing to modify herself or code switch. Her dad always encouraged her with positive affirmations. He instilled resiliency and how to be a team player through sports like soccer. From her mom, she developed captivating storytelling and how to use her voice to command attention, not just with her voice, but also with charisma.
I actually walk a lot. I walk a lot. I think something scientifically, it does something to your brain. And so a lot of times I walk. But it started out where I was writing a feature. So when you write a movie, you write by yourself. It's just you and your laptop and your story, and you write by yourself, and you write 110 pages. And I think the first movie I wrote was about a teenage mariachi singer in Los Angeles who secretly wanted to be a country star.
From car rides to being the daughter of immigrants, Emilia's life inspires her writing for the silver screen. While her experiences may be unique to her, the stories she tells resonate with millions.
She believes that our stories and experiences, as well as our traumas and challenges, shape who we are and the ways we navigate life.
So one time my cousin Fernando, who lives in the East Bay, got in my car and I started my car and it was like blasting country music. And he gave me so much shit for like weeks after that. And I was like, but how can you give me shit? It's the same as ranchera music. It's the same as mariachi music. It's like the same instruments, the big hats, the boots. And from that came this idea of this story. They always have like a version of identity. I think when you come from, when you're a first generation daughter coming from immigrant parents, there is constantly an identity crisis happening within you that you may not be aware of. You know, I always say, I love it when my cousins would make fun of me because that was the thing that I could use as a story point for humor or that someone else could relate to.
I have had my fair share of teasing from others. I've been called out about things I like or for the identities I hold, being gay, having an accent, loving reggaeton, putting ketchup on scrambled eggs, and so on. And in those moments, I was thinking, oh wow, but I do like those things, or I am those things. I grew up and I found my purpose. I learned that those things that I thought were liabilities are the things that empower me and are the parts of me I love the most. Like Emilia, I found my power and nobody can take it away from me.
I always say that I stick to my truth. Nobody can challenge my truth. Nobody can challenge my story. Nobody can say, well, I don't know if that's real. Okay, well, it didn't happen to you, but it happened to me. Or it happened to a family member, or it was part of an experience that I was a part of. I remember I was like looking for a job after college and I had a resume. My resume was very funny. And somebody was like, that's not a serious resume. And I was like, oh, good, because I don't want a serious job. You know, like I don't want to be at a company that's serious. You know, like I'm a serious worker. I will hustle hard. But, you know, if somebody can't see that you also need those people, then I don't want to work there, you know. And I think it was just kind of not being afraid to do that. And again, nobody was silencing me. You know, and if anybody tried, I would take myself out of that space. I would just be like, this isn't for me. I don't feel great about it. I don't feel great about myself. And so then I would try to take myself out of those situations, whether it was like roommates or jobs or relationships or partnerships, some creative partnerships.
No se vayan. When we return, the glitz, the glamour of Tinseltown.
We talk to Emilia about the challenge she's faced as she leads positive change and shapes Latinx identity in the entertainment industry. From St. Louis Public Radio
and PRX,
this is
We Live Here Auténtico. We know Latinos are perpetually absent in major newsrooms, Hollywood films, and other media industries. Their portrayals, or lack thereof, deeply impact how their fellow Americans view them. In fact, U.S. Representative Joaquin Castro has made the inclusion of Latinos in media a principal issue and implored Hollywood studio directors, journalism leaders, and book publishers to include their perspectives. He says the lack of accurate representation, especially in Hollywood, means at the very best that Americans don't get a full understanding of Latinos and our contributions. At worst, especially when Latinos are solely portrayed as drug dealers or criminals, it invites politicians to exploit negative stereotypes for political gain.
I also want to call attention to the fact that the numbers show the popularity and consumption of Latino media is through the roof, but does not translate to the actual representation. Hispanic Star, led by Claudia Romo, highlights that there is more room for Latinos on screen, and data shows that. In 2021, Latinos were just 7.1% of film leads, 7.7% of overall cast members, and 6.8% of writers, while we represent around 30% of all box office tickets. And it's not like there isn't a market for it. We don't talk about Bruno from Lin-Manuel Miranda is the most popular Disney song in 29 years. Bad Bunny's new album, who you've heard, broke Spotify records for most streamed album in 2022 and most streamed artists globally in a day.
Wow, and these are just some of the reasons that we are so glad to be talking to Emilia and to know that she's out in La La Land, movie capital of America, advocating and speaking up for our Latino voices and representation.
I think one of the mistakes that Hollywood makes is they keep going to the same well, right? They keep going to the same people and the same things. And a lot of times I will say, like somebody will say, oh, do you like Eugenio Derbez? And I was like, my mom does. You know, and it's like, I mean, listen, I love Rita Moreno as much as everyone else, but I'm like, that's, it feels like, oh, that's my mom's person. Where then, you know, we grow up and we're trying to find who our people are, and then the generation finds who their people are. I think the mistake that Hollywood makes a lot of times is, you know, new studies have shown that the modern Latinx or Latine or whatever we're going to say this week, it really doesn't find language to be the bonding to the culture as much as our generation did, right? So when we have shows and there's too much Spanish or, you know, all of a sudden there's some people that go, oh, this is for my parents, and they will turn themselves off for it. I also think it's like sometimes when we do certain shows, we're not showing what it looks like today, right? So I only work on brown and black shows. That's where I feel seen. That's where they see me. And I don't want to be the only Latino in a room. I've been that in the beginning of my career and it sucked, you know? So I don't do that anymore. And I haven't for quite a while. But I think it's just, what's the story? A good story is a good story. Is it a love story? Does it have a Latino character too? That to me is still representation. But we have to have an element of why is that person Latino in that story versus just putting, you know, Diane Guerrero in it, right? Like it has to be like Diane Guerrero was an Encanto and she's Colombian and the movie was set in Colombia. And I was like, how beautiful that it was such a gorgeous match, you know? And so it's like, sometimes we have to take projects and sometimes we're like, God, I hope they use some form of Latinidad to advance the dialogue. Or give somebody a little bit more of a layered story so that we're not constantly quote unquote the best friend, you know, or the sassy Latina or the, I sometimes always say like, listen, I love a sassy Latina. I'm a fucking sassy Latina, you know, like that's, I love it. And sometimes when someone says, well, is that a stereotype? And I was like, well, I guess I'm a stereotype. You know, I always say like my mom sang mariachi, my dad was a mechanic, and my grandmother had a Mexican restaurant. Well, I've hit every single stereotype that you can, but I've also lived it. So to me, it doesn't feel like a stereotype. It only feels like a stereotype. I can own it. It's mine.
Hispanic and Latino audiences shouldn't be addressed as a monolith. Breaking down the monolith means recognizing the heritage of Black, Asian, White, and indigenous cultures. More than 20 million Latinos identify as belonging to two or more races. That is a 567% increase from 2010, according to the Hispanic Star organization. At the end of the day, people look for shows featuring people who look like me. And while diversity is increasing, audiences still feel the representation is not accurate.
Growing up especially, I definitely wish I could see more people that look like me on TV, the big screen, and on the radio. That's why this is such a big deal. It's important for me, and for a lot of reasons, it matters. because the more representation we have of diverse cultures and people, it allows for more opportunities to have richer, more complex stories being told, and for understanding.
I just finished working on Promised Land. It was on ABC and it's now on Hulu. I had not worked on a drama in a long time, and I don't like working on dramas. And so I was like, you know, I think it was like a week where like I had three drama meetings where I was like, oh, this is so funny. I was like, I'm going to take the summer off and I'm going to work on this feature. And then, all of a sudden I had this meeting and it started out at the border and I was like, ugh, didn't I tell my agents I'm not doing border shit? And then I read it and I was like, oh, it's not the stereotypical border story. And it really, from that, I feel like it was such an opportunity to tell stories of our parents and how they came and the struggles and the sacrifices and then the rise up and how like some people rise up and don't forget who they are and some people rise up and forget, you know, to, you know, help somebody come up. And out of that, I really gave a lot of my family story in those. And I feel like that makes me so proud and I loved it for that reason, but it was also such a surprising experience for me. You know, I kind of went into it, not with like preconceptions of it, but it just was like, oh, it's gonna be a drama, this is gonna be hard. But so much of my life is probably more dramatic than humorous. The humorous is the reaction to the drama. And so I always say, oh, that's the piece that I love when I'm writing on a comedy. And so in a way, it was really like a beautiful way to tell that story. And I still love it. I mean, we're waiting to hear if it comes back, but I love it. And it has like Cecilia Suarez in it and John Ortiz, and it was a mostly Latino room, and Matt Lopez, who is a feature writer.
Emilia's contributions to High School Musical, Promised Land, Mixish, and others are important and needed successes. We couldn't be happier to know that our region has a part in her stories, and also grateful for her pushing through and doing her part now to mentor others so that the future is different.
Oh, I like other producers. You just don't read about them in the press. Like, I can point to a dozen successful Latina writers and Latino writers who are crushing it. You just don't know about them because they're not big and they're not famous, but they're constantly working. And they're, you know, constantly helping other people. But again, I feel like there is more representation happening. We just oftentimes don't hear about it. Should there be more? Yes, absolutely. But I will say, a lot of times on Latino shows, they don't have a lot of upper level writers on it. And I think that's also a problem, is like, it's hard to get into the business and then stay in the business, but you gotta help people level up. You really have to, you know, check all my mentees. I check in on them. I give them advice. Most of my handholding is emotional advice. That's how much it hasn't changed, is that we still have to talk about the hard meeting, the hard note that somebody gave. You know, someone once told me, a very famous Latina actress said my script was too Mexican.
We have so much more coming up next, including Emilia's response to her script being labeled too Mexican. The St. Louis Public Radio, EPRX.
Esto es.
We live here.
Auténtico.
Mexican? Is there such a thing?
You still deal with. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, my response was, I am Mexican. I can't be too.
Right.
It is.
Right.
That is me.
As we talked to Emilia, we both kept smiling at each other and feeling like she was not only speaking, but also living the whole purpose of this podcast, finding our voice, being ourselves. So we had to know what living authentically means to her.
I think it's just really constantly speaking up in a way that vibrates your being. You know, so anytime you are speaking up, and maybe it is something that resonates with other people, and maybe it's something that doesn't, but it's always resonating with you. it always feels like that's the thing that drives you, that like gives you that adrenaline rush. As long as you're always doing that and you can feel that way, regardless of whether it's, you know, one person or 100 or 1,000, it doesn't matter who hate or love it. That's the piece that I feel makes it authentic.
There are times in our lives that we feel alone, that we feel like we're the only ones that are going through something. Have you felt like that before, Gabby?
Absolutely. There have been many times in my life that it was total chaos and I really didn't even know what to do or who to go to for help. When I got divorced, when I had to find my first job after the divorce, when I moved to St. Louis and started my professional career, and even when I tried to find a counselor last year.
The power of representation is what creates visibility to the identities, situations, and beliefs we hold. Like the journey of being an immigrant, being single at 52 and exploring love, being a single mother, being a queer kid in school. Seeing those stories represented on TV by people that look and talk like you makes your story normal, valid, and known, and why we need each other.
I know this is so, I was just talking to my mom about this the other day. When I was growing up, my dad would say the most awesome things to me. He would be like, "You're gonna be so successful. Oh my God, you're gonna be successful." We drive by the fancy house and he's like, "You're gonna buy me that house one day." And I think it's like sometimes telling some like little, you know, he could have been a brujo frale new, or he was just all that. I'll take either of those things. But, you know, he always said like, "You're gonna leave, you're gonna be successful." I mean, it was like constantly saying successful, "You're gonna do it, you're gonna be it," that it never felt like I couldn't. I thought, okay, well, what's the worst that could happen? I move back home, you know, and get swaddled with Latina love and tamales. That sounds good too. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. So, you know, that's the stuff that I always say, like, I just got to keep the ball moving forward, you know? And then there's a quote that I love by Devon Franklin, who's this author and also this movie producer. And he had this quote and it said, "Embrace who you are. This will open doors, not shut them." And I think that is a piece of it, of just saying like, you know what, like, just keep it, just keep going and the right team will show up.
Just keep going. The right team will show up. We have learned so much from Emilia, from how she approaches her work, to how she's working to change the future of representation in Hollywood. The fact that our stories are still not reflected makes me kind of sad. What are we going to do about that, Gabby?
One thing we can definitely do, Alejandro, is go and watch the shows that are created by screenwriters like Emilia that bring their life stories into the big screen. Think about our own watching choices and the platforms that we're supporting. Basically, continue to break down those silos that alienate us from others and from our communities.
Our stories are a vital part of the American story, so stay tuned and be on the lookout for Emilia's next big hits.
She told us she will be rewriting the movie Made in Manhattan for Fox and a fun holiday movie that she is writing for Viacom about three friends trying to sabotage their boss, and even a book. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, we live here.
Auténtico!
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.